Steelman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Connor Newt, Jake Wallman behind the glass, and if I'm not mistaken, what we lost has been found. Nick Kieser and Nick Frazier have found their way back onto the show. Gentlemen, please tell me you're there.
Well, we're back somehow, some way. Thank you to Nick Frazier's ingenuity. But we are standing by at Bridgestone Arena trying to get the internet fixed. The Predators team has let us know they are on top of it.
That is good. That's great to hear. Hopefully the Predators...
But we're loud and clear, though, right?
Yeah, you guys sound great. I'm glad to hear from you. I don't know how Jared does solo for 4 hours, but here we are.
I will say, we were listening, and, you know, you sound great. I mean... Jared be proud. He ought to be proud.
I hope so. Well, you guys are here. Big guns are coming on the way. Parker Kelly will join us here momentarily. But let's start with the Preds. You guys are there in Bridgestone Arena. Big matchup tonight for the Predators after a big win in overtime on Saturday against the Los Angeles Kings 3-2. Can they ride the momentum against the Carolina Hurricanes here tonight at 7?
I mean, it's going to be a tough one. I mean, I just listened to Andrew Burnett this morning, and this time of year, it's always about, can you handle the noise around the game? Because the holidays the very next day and the day after, because a lot of these guys have families. So are they going to be dialed in? Or are they going to be able to stay on top of their game plan from the outset of the game? That's going to be something to keep an eye on, if they can stay sharp. And ultimately, Connor, I think that's going to be the biggest thing to pay close attention to. But at the same time, it is a Hurricanes team that's got a lot of offensive firepower. And from what I understand, the Predators might go 11-7 tonight. So they might be able to be, you know, sounder defensively with Justin Barron making his debut, presumably.
Yeah, Justin Barron, as you said, presumably making his debut. It is interesting, though, to look back. The Canes are coming off of a back-to-back, it looks like, playing last night, coming away with the win. It's always interesting to me to look at back-to-backs. How does the team play in the next game? I'm assuming UC Saros will be in net with Justus Onanen starting Saturday. Do you think the Canes coming into this game, maybe exhausted from last night's game, plays into the Preds' favor?
I mean, maybe, but I think them winning 3-1 is not really indicative of much, because they played the New York Rangers. And by the way, the New York Rangers also were a tire fire today too. So they're just down bad currently. So, but no, I think with them coming in, I'm interested to see how their energy level is as well. Now, obviously they don't have to deal with the pressures of, hey, we're home, the holidays tomorrow, we can just kind of relax, you know? So they have that going for them. They don't have to go far to get home, which is nice for them too. Not that that matters with the game, but I am curious to see how the goaltending matchup is for the Predators. Will they go back and face, I think his name's, Peter Kochetov. So I don't know if they'll go back to him. Yeah. I think it's Pietor Kochetov. So
Sounds like a Family Guy character.
It does. They could go to a Dustin Tokorsky. He's a guy that they just picked up via free agency. He's a 35-year-old guy that hasn't had too much NHL action lately. He just played against the Blue Jackets back on the 15th, and they have three goalies rostered, I believe, but I don't know who they're going to go to tonight. So they could see a guy that doesn't have a lot of experience this year.
Yeah, seems like goaltending has always been an issue for the Carolina Hurricanes, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, somewhat. I mean, Freddie Anderson's been their stalwart, but he gets hurt too much. And that's a big problem for them, especially if they want to make a deep run in the playoffs. And, you know, back when Brady Shea was with the Hurricanes, they were pretty formidable, you know, as an entire team. And so how do they continue to do as a unit on that regard as well? I don't know how well they've done in front of their goaltenders this year. I'd say that they've done it pretty adequately, given that they've won 21 games this year, Connor. But we'll have to see how their offensive team does, just because I mean, they didn't put up as many points against the Rangers as I thought they would with them struggling currently. Jack Roslovic scored a goal for them the other night. Sebastian Aho's obviously got to pay close attention to tonight here in Nashville. So we'll see if the Predators can limit their offensive chances. I thought the Preds have done a pretty good job of late keeping their opponents to the outside, especially on the PK. And Adam Willsby has done a very good job at just being sound. So that's going to be something to keep really close eyes on tonight is can they keep the game simple? Can they get past this one and ultimately come away with a win?
Keiser, what does the injury front look like for the Preds tonight? Have they gotten anybody else back since Saturday?
No one is back other than Roman Josi, who just played Saturday. There shouldn't be anybody else on the injury lookout whatsoever, Wallman.
I was at the game Saturday. They announced, obviously, your health injury updates. No one on the Preds list. Huge pop from the crowd. It was a good time. Fun time.
Yeah, that usually happens, though.
Yeah, that is true. Frazier, you're being quiet on me, man. What's your mindset going in here?
I'm here, man. I'm here loud and proud. You know, I'm intrigued to see what Justin Barron looks like tonight for the Preds. I mean, it just – you know, I've mentioned this to you as well, Connor, about just this drive that Barry Trotz has when it comes to the defense pairings. And then, like, Keiser can allude to this as well. Like, you know, you look at the Preds, and I mentioned you guys have a veteran and a young guy, like, paired one and the other. I think it's great. It complements each of the way that veteran player plays along with the youngster plays. It's just a good equaling out point, I guess I should say, for the players. But I mean, I would like to see what Philip Forsberg can do tonight against a very high octane offense in Carolina. So I mean, he's been on what, a 12 game scoreless, I believe.
Yeah,
because last time
I'm gonna check it. Yeah.
So I mean, I want to say 8 games, assists in those 12 games though. So
like he hasn't been absent, but yet he's still been absent scoring goals.
So what's weird is he has 6 points in his last 3 games. I mean, and they're all assists, which is wild to me. So, and I mean, by the way, none of them have been power play points apparently. So there is that to look at too. So 5-on-5, the Predators are clicking. And if people don't believe it, they should. They are doing a lot better in that regard.
Yeah, certainly something to watch for tonight. I mean, the power play has played significantly better, but I want to talk about that one goal the other day. It made a top play as well. Gus Nyquist wraps around behind the back, finds Zach LaRue in the crease, and just taps it home one time. Preds go up 1-0. I got to witness that one before Frazier dragged me out. But, you know, the young guns are playing hard and playing fantastic for this Predators team, in my opinion.
Yeah, they are playing really well. And, look, Gus Nyquist had an amazing play there. And I was so impressed that he was able to do that. I mean, the goalie was right place, right time for it to go right by his pad and his stick, just through that triangle that was right there of a hole. And it seamlessly found him. That was really cool to see Gus Nyquist take a peek out of the corner of his eye, anticipate, okay, I'm going to throw this behind my back and see if it gets there. It did. Zach LaRue with an even better read, if you ask me, because he's going to the middle. If he's right there, not only is it right place, right time, it's heads up hockey by the rookie. And that's only going to get better as time goes on, too.
He has certainly been impressive. The Preds play tonight, 7 p.m. pregame at 6 p.m. with Max Herz with Smashville Today. And then we get into the Lee Company Predators pregame show. We'll talk more Preds later on in the show. But since you guys are back, I want your thoughts on the college football playoff thus far. Parker Kelly will join us next segment as well to talk about it. This is Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Oh, yeah. The best Christmas movie there is. Hey, tune into 102.5, 106.3 The Game for the Trans Perfect Music City Bowl on Monday, December 30th. I believe that is Missouri and Iowa. Chase and Big Joe will have the pregame coverage starting at noon, and kickoff is set for 1:30 p.m. Music City Bowl coverage presented by Hi-Fi Buys. Welcome back. Stillman and Company, Connor Newt, joined by Nick Frazier and Nick Keiser over at Jack Daniels Barrel House outside Section 111 in Bridgestone Arena. And look at this. Parker Kelly. has found his way into the studio. I called in backup. I need backup. And boy, did I get it in Parker Kelly.
First of all, you didn't need backup. You sounded great.
Thank you.
But here I am, fresh off I-40, and I'm ready to talk some sports.
Of course.
Let's get into it.
Of course. So while I was alone here, I was talking a lot of college football playoff, a lot of formatting stuff. Would the BCS format fit a 12-team format better? I went through the list. You would have some interesting matchups like Indiana versus Boise State. You'd have Tennessee hosting Arizona State. Alabama would get in as the 11 at 9-3. Clemson would be left out based on overall record, which is the one thing I have a problem with. But in your mind, and I open this up to Nick Frazier and Nick Kieser too, in your mind, would the BCS system work better for a 12-team playoff?
I'm going to start off by saying that I was never in favor of the 12-team playoff. I didn't believe we needed expansion, but here we are. Now that it's here, I'm going to watch it because I love college football, first of all.
Right.
I do agree with you. I do think the BCS model would fit better, and here's why. The 12-team playoff de-incentivizes the regular season, which for traditional college football fans, the regular season is of the utmost importance. That's what makes college football special. The tradition, the pageantry, the opportunity to beat your rivals.
Oh, yeah.
That's what makes college football college football. The 12-team format, I could go on and on about why it's broken, why it needs fixed. If we're going to do the 12-team playoff, I still think it can work. But there are clearly things that need to be changed. The auto bids, we need to get rid of those. Mm-hmm. Boise State, I like Boise State. I still think they would have gotten in a regular 12-team playoff without an auto bid. I think they would get in at large. Arizona State, I have nothing but respect for Kenny Dillingham and that program. But what on God's green earth are we doing here? Because Boise State and Arizona State should not be having... What makes people think that they deserved a first-round bye?
Right.
Over, did you see the way Ohio State beat Tennessee on Saturday?
Yeah.
And you're telling me that they're better teams than Ohio State?
Yeah.
That's the first problem. There are so many. Penn State loses the Big Ten championship, and they have a water slide to the semifinals.
Sure.
They have to play, dog walked SMU, and now they have to play Boise State to get to the semifinals? I'll take that draw any day of the week.
Oh, yeah.
It's broken.
Oh, yeah. Nick Frazier, Nick Kieser. Thoughts on the college football playoff if we were to go to BCS?
Yeah, man, I'm all in for the BCS 12-team playoff. You know where I stand on this, Connor.
I know you do.
I think we've brought in the opinions of a committee that do not need to bring in their opinions at all when there's a computer format that's already got this situated. I mean, and I think this is a little skewed for the point if it's just at face value when it comes to the BCS. I mean, obviously Notre Dame is in as a 3 seed in the BCS, 12-team playoff. But you got to remember, since they're not in a conference, you got to, notch them out. So then it would technically be Notre Dame as the 5 seed hosting SMU as a 12 seed. Alabama would get in over Clemson, which is kind of crazy. But that's what the BCS ranking would say it is. And Ohio State would get that 4 spot. Because they have the head-to-head win over Penn State to end the season. So your top 4 spots would be Oregon, Georgia, Ohio State at 3, and then Texas at 4. And or you can shift those where you have Texas at 3 and Ohio State at 4. Either or. I mean, however you look at it. But I just think the first-round matchups are a lot better, in my opinion, because I'm in favor of Indiana hosting a first-round game. Well, was. Now they're out of it. But if this was the case, would love to see them go up against Boise State because Indiana right now, like, obviously lost this past weekend to Notre Dame. But I've even said on multiple occasions on the Chase McJoe show, on the weekend show, I still think Indiana would give Tennessee a run for their money in Neyland Stadium. Obviously, there are 2 Tennessee fans in studio with you, so they're probably going to disagree with what I'm saying.
And one
there.
Right next to you.
But yeah, you're right. And with that being said, like I'm not in on Nico. I don't want to twist this into a Vols segment at all, but I'm not sold on Nico. I saw a stat earlier this morning, 19 of his 15 touchdowns this season came against sub 500 teams or 500 barely above 500 teams.
That's not good. Not good at all. So four of those touchdowns actually came in a actual important game, which is you go back and look and you just think, well, Tennessee, yikes. Like, what is the future of this Vols, you know, football team? I would be concerned if I was a Vols fan. And I mentioned that this morning, and it got a lot of reception on the phone and text line. But as for the playoff in general, I'm definitely in favor of the BCS playoff. I just think we've come to the realization that this committee has basically botched the whole seeding process. It needs to be, once everybody gets into the playoff, they reseed them at the respected spots, and then you go from there.
Sure. Yeah. That is one thing about the 12-team playoff we have currently, is teams aren't punished for being in a conference. That's why Notre Dame is capped at 5. With the BCS, I mean, it goes as the record says, and Notre Dame is always going to be an 11-1, 10-2 team with the schedule they play. Not being in a conference would put them in a top-4 seed pretty much every time. So it is. I think if we were to adopt this system, it would need some tweaks. I'm not saying give auto bids, but you would have to have for sure a scenario where Notre Dame or teams that are not in a conference as an independent team would have to be capped at the 5 and stripped from the bye week.
Let me ask you a question, Connor. What is the meaning of the playoff? What is the college football playoff? What is the goal of the playoff?
To crown a champion.
Exactly. So we had Cincinnati when they played Alabama in the playoff. I'm blanking on the year. TCU 2 years ago when they played Georgia in the national championship. That was as close to a Cinderella as we're going to get in this college football playoff.
Yeah.
Boise State, SMU, Arizona State. I'm not saying they can't win a game. They certainly can. Boise State could beat Penn State this week or on New Year's Eve, and that would be awesome. But then they'd have to go on to beat Georgia or Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. They'd probably have to go on to beat Oregon mm-hmm. or whoever, Texas. It's just not going to happen. If you believed that there is a team in this playoff that could go on a Cinderella run, you're fooling yourself.
Yeah.
It's not rooted in reality.
This
it's
isn't
not
basketball.
Happen.
This is not basketball. There are momentum shifts in football that are unlike no other. But I'm with you. There's no Cinderella.
And I'm sure we're going to get a caller in here that's going to say, well, certainly they have a shot. They're in the playoff. No, they don't.
No.
They don't have that's a just, shot.
What have I always said about college football and what is driving all these narratives of just the playoff itself?
Money.
Bingo.
Here's the thing. The people who are making the decisions, they shouldn't be in power because they're making the wrong decisions. The wrong people have their hands on the wheel.
Yeah, it's politics, though. It's just how, unfortunately, the NCAA works. Frazier says this all the time. It's money-driven. Everything in this country is money-driven. Everything in this world is money-driven. But specifically in the sports world, college football and college sports are king at money-driven decisions.
If you can't tell, this is my campaign. I'm running for college football office.
Yes, you are.
So,
yes, you are. Well, hey, let's continue this conversation. I want to open it up to the Vols loss against Ohio State now that I have two more Vols fans here. On Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Song is fitting towards the college football playoff, specifically one team that we're about to get into, the Tennessee Volunteers. Welcome back, Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Connor Newt alongside Parker Kelly in studio over at Jack Daniels Barrel House outside Section 111 in Bridgestone Arena. Nick Kieser and Nick Frazier. And gentlemen, these guys dropped in Bridgestone Arena. I dropped them before I could have the chance to talk with them about this. But the Volunteers get hammered in Columbus, Ohio. Hammered, 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 hammered.
Yeah. We get it.
We get it. What kind of changes need to be made, specifically within the staff, for this Vols team to get over the hump? What does Josh Heupel need to change his system? Does Josh Heupel need to recruit more explosive players? Where I'm getting at is, look at the difference between the 2022 team offensively and this team. Stark, stark difference.
Yeah. Really, the main difference which a lot of people notice, is the offense. The offense in 2022 was the driving force behind that team with Hendon Hooker, Jalin Hyatt, Cedric Tillman. The defense, on the other hand, was not as good. It was in the hundreds in terms of defensive efficiency. Fast forward to 2024, this team's strength is the run game and defense. Passing game has been nowhere to be found. So what the Vols need to do is, I think in terms of what this season showed us, is it showed us that Josh Heupel is a really, really, really good coach. Why I say that is, he's shown the ability to win in different ways. He won primarily in 2022 on the shoulders of Hendon Hooker in the passing game. 2024, it's defense and running the football. Two completely different styles of play. And he still found a way to get in the playoff. And that was the non-negotiable from the start for this Vols team, was to make the playoff. Here's the difference. They're going up against Ohio State, who has aliens on the outside at wide receiver in Emeka Abuka and Jeremiah Smith.
Aliens.
And they have aliens in the backfield with Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins. This was simply, you can scheme up whatever you want, but this was simply the Vols just getting outmatched athlete for athlete. That's mm-hmm. simply what it was. So the answer, it's not really an easy answer, but what the Vols need to do is, okay, they bring in a really, really good recruiting class this cycle. What you have to do is you got to keep stacking those recruiting classes on top of each other and maintaining the roster mm-hmm. because that's what Ohio State does. Ohio State seems like they're in the top five in recruiting classes every single year. Tennessee has been in the top 15, but they haven't been elite in terms of your Georgias, your Notre Dames, your Ohio States. Hey, so Parker, that's the answer.
Yeah. Parker, let me ask you a question, bud, because we had a caller calling earlier today and mentioned, you know, Josh Heupel may not be the guy of the future. Do you believe Josh Heupel can win Tennessee a national championship?
Yes, I do.
Okay. That is where the road splits in this conversation, because there are people, obviously there was about, I think, two people that agreed this morning, one that called in and said that, you know, Josh Heupel is always going to get Tennessee to relevancy. They're always going to get them to 9 to 10 wins every season, and that's it. That's the ceiling for Josh Heupel. So do you think this is a honeymoon phase that has now decided to, you know, end up becoming the end of the fairy tale, or is it just something that they have to actually fix within the system of changing out the coaching staff and so forth? I mean, that's where it all kind of splits for me, is some people think they're out on Josh Heupel and possibly Nico Iamaleava, or – they just need to reevaluate some things.
I'm going to return your question with a question. How many active coaches in the sport have won a national championship?
Again, you broke up there.
How many active coaches have won a national championship in college football?
That's a great question. I'm going to take an educated guess and say, what, two?
That's right. Kirby Smart and Dabo Sweeney. Winning a national championship, and I know I'm speaking the obvious here, but it's a really, really hard thing to do. And just because Tennessee hasn't done that since 1998 doesn't mean they can't. They just haven't yet. What Josh Heupel was able to do, you consider all the Jeremy Pruitt allegations that he had when he came in, that Vols team has gone through decades and decades of just trauma. And he was able to get to 11 wins in year two and win the Orange Bowl. And then this year was able to make the college football playoff. And I'm going to go back to your Nico comment that you made earlier. He was not great this year, and you're 100% right about that. He's also a freshman, and he also has more time to develop. And I also think there was a lot of unfair criticism placed on Nico's shoulders. I also think the hype was way, way, way too high, because – they yeah. want Hendon Hooker from 2022 this year. And that was very unfair to be placed on Nico.
Two different types of quarterbacks. That's the thing. And everybody wants that old school style like Hendon Hooker on that Tennessee team. You're not going to get that with Nico Iamaleava. You're just not. They're two different style quarterbacks. I think, in my opinion, this is just the way college football is starting to evolve. Everybody is short-fused. I could easily see, you know, the Vols going after a key marquee player in the portal and or, you know, maybe in the recruiting aspect of things, where they're going to need another quarterback, because if, from the likes of it, if you're going into the SEC schedule year in and year out that Nico Iemaliava had this year, I mean, a lot of his touchdowns, and I mentioned it earlier, I don't know if you were on or not, but 15 of his 19 touchdowns came from around 500 to sub 500 teams.
Yep, and you're 100% right. He looked great against the Chattanoogas, the NC States, and those types of teams. So media members and fans saw him lighting up the Mox defense, lighting up the Wolfpack, and expected him to carry that out throughout the regular season. I think there was a little bit crowning Nico way too early, but I'm not selling my Nico stock quite yet. And the Vols are bringing in two good quarterbacks. They brought in George McIntyre, who is a borderline five-star quarterback from Brentwood Academy. And then in 2026, they're bringing the number one overall recruit, who's a quarterback, Fazion Brandon out of North Carolina. So that position should be fine. I think the big drop-off is at wide receiver. They brought in Chris Brazel from Tulane in the transfer portal, brought in Dante Thornton from Oregon 2 years ago, but they haven't been able to replace the production that Jalin Hyatt and Cedric Tillman had 2 years ago. And I think that's where the big drop-off is in the passing game.
It's a production thing, for sure. Go ahead, Fraser.
I don't know, guys. I'm still out on this Tennessee team right now. I'm out on this.
They're out too, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, obviously so. But it's just this Vols team, guys. It to me, I just don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I just see what one of the callers said earlier, that Heupel is one of those coaches that's going to get you 10 wins every year, and he's going to get you in the conversation, but I don't know if he's going to get you over the hump. And that might be premature to say, but that's kind of the way things are trending. And as for George McIntyre, I mean, phenomenal recruit, athlete, so forth. I mean, nothing against him, but my alma mater in high school, last year, I mean, they put up like a 50 spot, and it must have just been a bad game for McIntyre, but I have my thoughts about him.
He certainly looked a lot better this year, but yeah, that wasn't a good look, certainly. I think we might have to agree to disagree on this one, but I'm not selling my Heupel stock yet. I think there's a big difference between cannot and just has not, and the Vols have not. They're not an elite team by any means. Tennessee is certainly relevant again, but we just see they're not able to compete with the big boys of college football quite yet.
I said this earlier when a couple hours ago, actually. I said Tennessee is relevant again. They are not contenders again.
Right, I 100% agree.
And I think to get to the path of contention once again, it goes through Josh Heupel. Can he do it, whether or not, remains to be seen. Frazier says no. Parker Kelly obviously says yes. Not sure where I stand. Frazier, you got some interesting thoughts on this.
I do.
I don't know who to sign with.
I do have some interesting thoughts. I have some other interesting thoughts as well when we get to the other side of the break here. But, you know, Jordan Schultz put out on Twitter, I think it was last night, there is a contingent of 49er fans that have some words about their head coach, Kyle Shanahan.
Well, Kyle Shanahan on the hot seat, according to the fans. We'll get into it next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Connor Newt joined in studio by Parker Kelly. Over in Barrel House, outside Section 111 in Bridgestone Arena, Nick Kieser and Nick Frazier are with us. And Frazier set it up earlier. Kyle Shanahan, apparently not well liked by the fans. There was a tweet posted by Jordan Schultz, well-known NFL reporter, and it reads this: "There's this contingent of 49ers fans that want to move on from Kyle Shanahan. It's baffling to me. Nobody is immune to one down season in this league." The 49ers obviously having a down season, but have been plagued by massive injuries. Mathematically eliminated from the playoffs yesterday with a Philadelphia Eagles loss. Frazier, your thoughts on the Kyle Shanahan news?
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. Obviously, there's music being played in the background, but here's the deal. If Titans fans are open to the idea of Kyle Shanahan, like if the Titans were to hand over the keys to Kyle Shanahan right now, would Titans fans be okay with letting Shanahan be the GM and also head coach, kind of a Belichick role. I'd be all in for it. I mean, and or I don't want to say move on from Brian Callahan, but if that is the option, if Kyle Shanahan's name is out there as an option to bring into another franchise, I mean, by default, I think you would maybe keep Rand Carthon because of the 49er ties. I mean, what do you guys think? I think that might be an option, but obviously it doesn't seem like the Titans are willing to move off of Brian Callahan and Rand Carthon after just one season. So I'm just curious. My only thing is I'm a little apprehensive when it comes to Rand Carthon and this, you know, front office when it comes to the draft, because I think you talked about it earlier in the show, Connor, about, you know, the drafts that Rand Carthon's had. Sure, they've not been the best, but nor have they been great either. So, I mean, it's just something that's concerning, but also it's an interesting topic because this could be an option for teams out there, especially Titans could be one of them.
I have a hard time believing it's a real option. I think Kyle Shanahan is really glued to San Francisco. You got to think this is a fan perspective. This is the fan saying, we want Shanahan out. We as Titans fans could say we want Rand Carthon out all we want. But ultimately, it's up to Amy Adams Strunk to make that move. It's up to San Francisco's owner to make that move, or the GM, or whoever makes that decision. I just can't see that one down year with an injury-plagued team, given the talent they have that is on the shelf, I can't see that as a cause for firing of one of the best coaches, if not the best coach in the league.
Well, you also got to consider where the San Francisco 49ers are located. They're in California. Don't know what they're smoking out there, but Kyle Shanahan is the perfect fit for the San Francisco 49ers. Literally all of his assistant coaches that have got head coaching jobs in the NFL are doing just fine. He's batting 1,000 in that area. And he's one of the most prolific offensive play callers in, dare I say, the history of the NFL. He's led the 49ers to multiple Super Bowls. If they want to move off of Kyle Shanahan, they're crazy.
Yeah.
This team has been injury riddled all season long. They're basically one injury away from being the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
Well, but guys, here's the thing. I mean, we're not judging teams and coaches off of how good their assistants do currently. Like, let's not
I'm
bat
not saying that's
that
the,
way.
Yeah, I'm not saying
yeah,
that's
but
the
I
criteria.
Mean, if we're talking about the 49ers having success, yeah, it's dependent on the staff as a whole. But I think with Shanahan's success, not only has it been – I mean, I don't want to call it revolutionary. It's not. But I think it's definitely the most creative that we've seen in the last few years. And, you know, in the last couple of years – even though they've got Debo, they've got Kittle, I mean, they've got McCaffrey now, and I guess Brock Purdy is something. I mean, we'll see how much he gets paid. But, I mean, guys, like, I think it's blown out of proportion that, like you said, Parker, it's the fans blowing this up more than likely, and I think that it's only going to catch up steam because they're out of the playoffs. I mean, it's plain and simple if you ask me.
It's you hit it right on the head, Keezer. It's absolutely blown up by the fans. You do have to look at it, though. The players that he has had that have been healthy have not played up to par. Debo Samuel has not played like Debo Samuel we know. George Kittle, when healthy, has not been the George Kittle we know.
Really? He hasn't?
Doesn't seem like it.
He's literally third in league history in yards per game. Like, he's up there with Tony Gonzalez and Travis Kelce and Rob Gronkowski. I think George Kittle's kind of carrying the offense right now.
You make a good case.
And it's not Kyle Shanahan's fault that literally the best back in the NFL has been hurt majority of the season and got hurt again. It's not his fault that their backup running back also got hurt in Jordan Mason, who was top five in the league in rushing yards before CMC came back.
They're trotting Isaac Guerrero or Eddie Guerrero, whatever the
Brandon Ayuk got hurt at the start of the year. Debo Samuel, I will give you that. He has not been himself. That Trent Williams has been hurt. Their offensive line has just been riddled with injuries. I mean, you had a player walk out, one of their best players on defense, just walk out in the middle of a game.
Yeah.
Like, that's not Shanahan's fault.
Yeah. You do have to look at it, though, from a front office standpoint. You got to pay Brock Purdy. You can't pay him a nickel a game anymore. I get he was Mr. Irrelevant, and you're kind of riding off that cheap paycheck. But if he's your franchise guy, Like, I think he has shown you he can be. You got to pay that man. And with that decision comes other decisions. You know, do we want to keep Deebo Samuel around? He's got a fat paycheck. Do we want to keep Brandon Ayuk around? There's a tough conversation to have. Frazier and Kiser, if this were to happen, could you see a possible move to Kyle, for Kyle Shanahan to the Titans?
I would like to see it. I mean, here's the deal. Like, you guys were talking about the 49ers and some of their players and how they were injury riddled this past season. But, like, you got to remember as well, that core, it's not getting any younger. Trent Williams, not a spring chicken anymore. Christian McCaffrey, of all people, sure, he's one of the best backs in the league. But at the same time, Achilles injuries, they're not great to have. They take a long time to recover from. Sure, yeah, he's had some, you know, back and forths with all that. But, dog, in my opinion, I think it's time to kind of close this window they have of opportunity when it comes to Super Bowl. Obviously, they're going to hold on to it as long as possible, but it's the NFL, not for long. Like, this is – it's going to come to an end eventually. And I will say something about coaches. Sometimes things with coaches, they don't end. And that's the mentality of Kyle Shanahan, his offensive creativity. He just has to find a new home, and maybe that is the case, or maybe this is just fan-driven and fans are getting upset about it. One of the two.
Well, and also, too, you don't want to have Kyle Shanahan and possibly Aaron Rodgers. Not to say that one's going to happen over the other or both are going to happen at all, but it is certainly an interesting dynamic to think about. The Titans could really shift their culture this offseason. So I don't know if there's a big coach that becomes available that we're not thinking about yet. That's certainly a possibility. But I think what's more intriguing to me is that this is getting enough backlash that they are thinking to themselves, do we think there's a future without Kyle here? I mean, if the fans start to like it, there could be more noise around it. And I don't know if the two-tone blue would want to act on it. But Rand Carthon, hey, why not go to your old friend, you know?
Yeah.
I would love Shanahan in Nashville. Don't get me wrong. But I think there is a 0% chance that's happening.
There's 0%.
Even if he were to get fired, I don't see him.
There's a 0% chance, and the reason why is that's a win now move. The Titans are, as we know, very, very far from win now.
I think Frazier brought up a great point when he said, you know, he was talking about the injuries and, you know, those players not being spring chickens anymore. Attrition's a real thing in the NFL. And if you think about how long the 49ers have been in the playoffs, like over the past four or five seasons, if you consider just the games they've played in the playoffs alone, that's basically a whole other season. And that's a lot on those players. That's a lot to ask for.
Yeah, certainly. We will get to the conversation. We will continue the conversation next up on Stillman and Company 102.5, 106.3 The Game. But before we do, Parker Kelly, thank you for coming. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for everyone listening. It's been a wild mess of a day, but thank you for having us. We will continue the Kyle Shanahan conversation. Dylan, hold on. We will get to your call up next on Stillman and Company 102.5, 106.3 The Game.